Space shapes behaviors. Behaviors create culture. And culture drives results. This is the More Than a Chair podcast by Business Furniture and Corio, where we're creating space for innovation, for dreamers, and for the next big idea. Curing the culture crisis in a pandemic. COVID-19 will change the way we work, perhaps indefinitely. But what does this mean for office culture, the heart of every successful business? According to a recent CNBC survey, 54% of workers say their jobs have become more difficult due to the pandemic. Managers will need to learn new ways to connect with their teams and continue to engage and create a culture where people want to work and feel safe. I'm your host, Amanda Clark, and this is the More Than a Chair podcast by Business Furniture and Corio. Today, we have special guest Amy Woodall, Executive Vice President at Sadler Training Trust Point, where she focuses on helping companies grow their people, profit, and effectiveness in sales, service, and leadership. We also have our own Business Furniture and Corio CEO, Mary Beth Oakes, here to help examine the new office culture. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm like just so excited to dive into this because I think it's just something we're all talking about right now. And Amy, I know you have just a wealth of knowledge and such great viewpoints on some of this. What do you think it is about our current climate and office culture? What are the conversations you're having right now? And how do you think we can do better?
Yeah. So I've actually, Mary Beth and I have even chatted about this a little bit. I think that what we are experiencing now happens to be, these gaping holes that maybe didn't exist prior to COVID. Prior to COVID, maybe they were cracks in the foundation and cracks, you know, culturally, maybe it was how we communicated, maybe it was how we were engaging our workforce. And then the minute COVID happened and we were all, you know, pushed into working from home and trying to figure out how this remote thing works, we started to see those cracks turn into gaping holes. And so, you know, for some folks, maybe things have gotten stronger for them. Maybe what was going really well prior to is still rocking and they're still really good, but where they were weak, it's even more difficult. And so, you know, the conversations we're having is, how do we just get the results that we want? How do we help people keep from burning out? How do we collectively come together and continue to grow as a team? You know, a lot of people are asking themselves these same questions.
Yeah, Mary Beth, we've talked a lot about this. What do you think about why there's a big part of you that feels like we've got to get back in some form or capacity to help relight that fire of culture?
Yeah, I think it's so hard, you know, even if you can see somebody on a Zoom call, you're not really seeing them. And Amy, I've thought so much about our conversations, even like from a year ago, and so much of what we've talked about, I know is so relevant. And, you know, Amy, I know you have a whole concept around owning your 50, and I'd love to have you, you know, talk a little bit more about that. But to me, that owning your 50 is more relevant now than ever. And, you know, even just trying to have some agreements on how you're going to stay connected. And, you know, I know, for an example, Amanda and I meet like 3 times a week. And, you know, maybe in the times pre-COVID, we would not have scheduled 3 meetings a week. But now, you know, that's our way of staying connected. And that's our way of, you know, asking each other questions and making sure that we're moving ahead with some of the critical initiatives we're working on. So it's very different. I mean, it seems like it's everyone's trying to be much more intentional. But sometimes I think, you know, that, you know, has a different impact on different people, right? So I think as a leader, it's really important to try to understand how each one of your team members is being impacted and, you know, trying to figure out how the best way is to communicate with that person. So I know as a leader, that's, you know, kind of even more to put on your plate, but I think it's really more critical than ever.
Absolutely. Amy, talk to us about this owning your 50 and how you're kind of talking about it in this new work environment right now. Why is it maybe even more relevant than ever?
Yeah. So own your 50 is my philosophy on whenever we are experiencing or we're the participator in anything, then we are automatically 50% of the problem or the solution. And we have to own our 50, right? We've got to own our part. And when I say that, I mean, we've got to own 100% of our part. We just happen to be 50% of, you know, the outcome. And so You know, prior to, I talked a lot about this in the context of interdepartment relationships and how we communicate with coworkers, how we communicate with one another, that it's really easy to point the finger at someone else and tell them what they should have done or could be doing and, you know, feel upset or disappointed by the actions and behaviors of other people. But we've got to think twice as hard about our own actions as we do others. And so as we're, you know, home or disconnected in some ways from our teams, not seeing each other. And yes, Zoom is helpful, but Zoom is also exhausting. Our brains have to work overtime to become even better communicators when we're using Zoom. You know, we've got to say, what do I need? How can I advocate for myself? You know, where do I need help? Where do I need to create boundaries? Or where do I need to learn how to say no? And so owning our 50 right now is really learning how to advocate for what we do need in order to be successful. And also being curious about how we're feeling and why we're feeling that way before we point the finger immediately at the business should be doing this or my manager should be doing this. You know, ask ourselves, am I standing up and sharing and again, advocating for what it is that I need?
I love that perspective that each one of us really has a responsibility now more than ever in terms of how we show up. And, you know, I think, you know, part of that owning our 50, I think needs to include some empathy, right, for others, right? Because everyone's going through their own unique set of circumstances right now. And, you know, it's a difficult time to navigate that. But I think that empathy piece really can help as you're thinking about that being a part of how you can own your 50 is displaying empathy towards others and just recognizing that I think everybody is doing the best that they can. And, you know, we've talked a lot about how do we meet people where they are? And, you know, it's an interesting time because there are so many things right now that we can't necessarily control. And, you know, we've just tried to have a philosophy, I know, with our team about meeting people where they are, whatever that might mean on any particular day. And to me, it kind of boils down to that empathy, right? So it goes a long way.
We've talked a lot about that just even from our leadership teams and how that empathy. Amy, what advice do you have for managers and leadership positions who are just desperately trying to engage and keep a team spirit alive while making sure that work is getting done? What advice do you have for them right now?
Yeah, so I would say keep the curiosity going, which is something that, you know, I'm always preaching no matter what. It doesn't matter if you're in sales or, you know, customer services or leadership, that, you know, really our curiosity is what allows us to create a bond of trust with someone else. And so reach out to your team and say, how are you doing? How is your stress level? What are you doing to help, you know, transition from one role to another? And really, just as Mary Beth mentioned, bring the empathy in with your curiosity, because not everybody is going to show up and share what it is that they need or want. And it is our responsibility to have a better understanding of that. And then also allow people to give themselves a break and the benefit of the doubt. I feel like what we are going to eventually evolve into is less of a work environment that's based on a 9-to-5, let's say, and more of a work environment that's based on results. And that's not going to be the same for all industries because everybody's a little bit different. And so as you're managing your team and whatnot, to just to be clear and curious about where they need help reaching the results and letting themselves off the hook if they feel like they've not, oh my gosh, I was only able to work 4 hours this morning and I'm going to have to work four more this, you know, this evening. And I think helping them get control of the voice in their head that brings the shame and the judgment to the table.
Well, and something, Amy, that you had said, I don't know, this has been fairly recently, about trust becoming the new currency. What does that mean? Like, how do you describe that?
Yeah, so I think this is applicable both for our client base and then also internally as a culture. You know, how we show up for people when challenge happens really stays with us. We remember that at the end. I mean, your clients or your clients and your employees who were loyal before, if we rise to the occasion when scary stuff happens, they're going to be even more loyal later on. And what that does is it develops a new level of trust of, I know they're here for me. I know that they care about me. I know that we're in this together. And that in itself is a major currency. I mean, it is something that we can bank on when this, I don't know if you guys are tired of hearing the phrase, the new normal. I feel like.
Yes. I'm okay. Over it.
It's a little watered down at this point, but I do feel like that's a currency that we can all bank on with many of our relationships once we are able to get back to life and be in public places with one another once again.
Yes, that is a phrase we've been talking about a lot, how we're getting a little sick of it. But there, I like the check-in point of just asking how people are. What do you think some of the things about mental health and morale issues that companies are facing right now that maybe they've never faced before?
Yeah, well, I've seen it two ways. I have seen some teams come together like never before because the pettiness has gone away. They're sort of like the idle gossip and the idle chit chat isn't happening because we're not crossing paths in the hallway at work, right? And so I have seen where some cultures have actually, you know, risen to the occasion. They've really come together as a team and they're collaborating better than they ever have. And it's a little bit like that, the 9/11 effect. If you guys remember the day after 9/11, how every stranger we passed on the street, we just had this connection and this understanding mm-hmm. of the grief we were all experiencing. You know, there are some cultures who are having that phenomenon happen. Like, hey, we understand we're all collectively going through this scary time together. And so rather than bringing in the pettiness that maybe got between us before, we're all coming together. And again, back to my, like the statement that I started off with, where cracks in the foundation may have been there prior to, and now they've become gaping holes. If we did not have the trust before, if we did not have it, and we're all in this together mentality, then you were going to see more division than ever. You're going to see people who are more needy, who tend to bring more drama to the table. So something that I love teaching is the Cartman's drama triangle, which is where my phrase own your 50 really came from. So when we're dealing on Cartman's drama triangle, which means any amount of conflict, people tend to play one of three roles. They're either victim, and the victim is the woe is me, I have no control, no power, this is somebody else's fault. And the victim is not owning their 50. They are giving theirs away. They're like, here, you take care of this because, you know, I have no part in the solution. And then we have the persecutor. And the persecutor is the one who is very frustrated and they're blaming. So, the persecutor is kind of like, you need to get this done. I told you about this a week ago. And the victim and the persecutor really have a heyday. And where leaders and managers often find themselves is in the rescuer role. And the rescuer role is trying to come in and make everything better for everybody and make life easier. And what can I do to help? And it seems like a nice role to take, except the rescuer ends up creating learned helplessness. And they're actually disempowering their teams because they're doing the solution for them. And inevitably, that rescuer will fall into a victim or persecutor role because they're either going to feel so defeated because they're fixing everyone's problems, or they're going to feel so frustrated because they're fixing everyone else's problems. And so, you know, own your 50 is stepping to the center and bringing curiosity to the table. It's not saying, here's what you need to do and here's how you need to fix it. It's saying, how are things going? What have you tried? What's working well? You know, when you've reached out to other people, what advice did they give you? Where do you think that I can be of assistance? It's really, again, bringing in curiosity without stealing the opportunity to empower by solving too soon.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot to think about. That's a lot to digest. I love that.
A lot to think about, but mm-hmm. it is super helpful. I think especially right now, right? When we can't always see each other, right? We have to trust good intentions. I mean, you know, like Amy, I tend to believe that generally people have good intentions, right? And I think, you know, when we're in these, you know, distance locations and we can't be together, you really more than ever, you have to trust good intentions and that everybody had, you know, the best of intentions on getting a project completed and everybody had the best of intentions of, you know, doing whatever they need to get done, you know, in their role, right? So it comes back to that empathy piece. But I just love the idea of the curiosity and asking lots of good questions and, you know, I think as a leader, that's hard to do. I think most leaders, a lot of leaders want to jump in and try to fix because they think that's their role and that's their job. When really, to Amy's point, that is learned helplessness, right? So how can we take advantage of this opportunity right now to help people be better, right? And to do what they do better and to feel better, right? So through just coaching them and asking questions and getting them to really think about the solution to their problem so they feel very empowered.
Yeah, part of that own your 50 is again, you know, back to, we were talking mental health, you know where you fall when you feel overwhelmed. You know, what is your default position? Are you somebody who jumps in and tries to rescue and solve everybody else's problems to your own demise? Is your default to go victim and feel very helpless and like your hands are tied? Is your default to point the finger at other people and really own that position? Own what your default is and then ask yourself, how can I make a shift so that I can be a part of the solution rather than the continuation of the problem? And I think that that self-empowerment, that in itself actually helps us with our potential mental burnout because we're seeking solution and resolution rather than problems. And, you know, as the business furniture team is very well aware, I am like the world's biggest proponent of meditation. Mm-hmm. Like you would think that I was, you know, like a paid endorser of meditation because I preach about it all the time. And us taking a moment when our buttons are pushed or we feel, again, overwhelmed, stressed, whatever that emotion is for us, anxious, worried, fearful, to notice it, the feeling in the body, and take a few moments to breathe. Just breathe, help de-escalate your brain, identify where it is that you're starting to fall in that Cartman's drama triangle, and then choose to make shift happen and really shift into a space of ownership so that you can get again to resolution.
Well, another Amy-ism, there's so many good Amy-isms that I've picked up over the past couple of years of knowing Amy that I love. Another one is about, you know, having a contract in place, right, with your fellow leaders, with the people on your team. And I just love that concept because I feel like now more than ever, like having, you know, really role clarity and trying to have good expectations about what everybody's doing and, you know, really being clear about those expectations. And I think that's been super helpful for me just to think about, you know, how do you set expectations and manage expectations, you know, all while displaying empathy, right? I mean, that's a big order, but I think it's really helpful to the team. So Amy, what does that mean? Like if you're thinking about a contract with somebody else, what does that mean?
Yeah. So there's a Sandler saying that if your foot hurts, you're probably standing on it, which means if we're feeling frustrated by the behavior of someone else, there's some way that we contributed to it. Again, back to that own your 50, right? Maybe we weren't clear about expectations. Maybe we were on, you know, we had assumptions about what it really meant. And so what Mary Beth's referring to is the upfront contract that we teach in our sales programs and leadership programs and customer care programs, which is how do we have a verbal agreement that we both know and understand what our roles are and what the ideal outcome is going to be. So the way that happens, let's just say that Mary Beth and I are going to get together and we're going to talk about this great big initiative for the company about bringing the culture together. Well, the way that we would set this contract so that we make sure that we're both on the same page is I would say, hey, Mary Beth, you know, I know that we want to get together and we want to discuss these new initiatives. When we're in that meeting, what are the important things that you want to make sure that we cover? So what I'm doing is giving her a chance to share with me what her role is and what she'd like to have happen during that meeting. So I'm listening, I'm acknowledging, and then I share with her what my expectations for the meeting are. Sounds great, Mary Beth. Here's what I would like to achieve when we're together. Does that sound okay to you? And she would either agree or disagree. And then we agree on time. You know, let's set 90 minutes aside for this meeting just so that we make sure we can cover everything that we're wanting to cover. And if for some reason we don't get to that, let's decide, you know, the next time that we need to meet. And then at the end of this meeting, we can decide who's responsible for what, et cetera. So through that, you know, quick little download there, we both have an understanding of what she needs from me, what I need from her, how much time are we committing, and what are we hoping is going to happen at the end of that meeting. So we're all on the same page. I feel like people are good at doing this pretty naturally. What we tend to forget is the acknowledgement of the other person's role. And we tend to just tell them what we need. Here's what I need from you. Here's what I need. Here's what I need. And we're letting them know our part, but we're not bringing them in. And effective communication is two people on the same page, completely understanding what's happening. And we're really good about, you know, sharing us and wanting other people to understand our perspective, but we forget theirs. And that is where he said, she said, starts to come in when we do not invite the other party to join us on our effective communication mission.
Well, and I think that's right now, like what the part of the challenge is, right? Because those upfront contracts are more critical than ever. Because if you think about, you know, nonverbal communication, you know, that's 80% of how we communicate typically, right? And so much of that nonverbal communication, you know, we're kind of missing right now, because even when you're on a Zoom call with somebody, you can't really fully experience that nonverbal, right? You get it partially. So I think, you know, using your words to be as clear as possible and being curious and trying to understand the other person's point of view and what they need, I think it's so important. I mean, now more than ever, because I think you were describing those cracks, Amy, and I think cracks can build, you know, when you don't have that common understanding of one another. And it is harder when you're trying to communicate via telephone or via Zoom, mm-hmm. because you are missing out on that nonverbal. And, you know, even like when you're texting somebody something, you know, I know our team was working on a project over the weekend and we're texting each other furiously. And, you know, I just am sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, I hope that everybody understands that, you know, it's all good and there's not a problem here. We're just working through this, you know, this project and trying to get it finished. And, you know, it's hard when you can't talk to each other and see each mm-hmm. other, right? So mm-hmm. you just have to, you know, you have to just hope that you can somehow convey your feelings and your emotions and everything that you might share nonverbally, you know, when people can't see you. And so I think as a leader, that's difficult, right? So that I think those upfront contracts and taking the time is so important right now, more than ever.
There's yeah. definitely the dynamics of human behavior. So to your point, Mary Beth, if we're looking at the communication pie chart of how we interpret communication just as humans, right? But all of us people all over the world, 55% of how we communicate and interpret communication is that physiology you're talking about, your body language, your facial expressions, you know, and we have these mirror neurons within our brain that are picking up the nonverbal cues around us. And they're kind of telling us subconsciously how we need to adjust to better communicate. And even with Zoom, we've got a little bit of the mirror neurons that are working and helping us out, but there's still a lot of work that our brain is having to do to try and really focus and pay attention and make sure that we're catching up all of the cues that we can, basically from the shoulders up, let's face it. And then 38% of communication is based on tonality. So, you know, what tone are we in? Are we in a harsh tone? Do we sound annoyed? Are we pleasant? Are we happy, et cetera? That is telling a story. And only 7% of communication is based on words. And if we're doing more emails, more texting, more, you know, word only communication, we do set ourselves up for miscommunication to come through for a few different reasons. Number one, we have a tendency to put tone to words based on either our last interaction with that person and our trust level with that person or our mood for the day. So if I wake up and I didn't sleep well and I'm not owning my 50 and I want to make the world responsible for it, if I get a text message from, you know, a leader that's asking me to do something, I may choose to read that tone in a way that validates the victim mode that I'm in that moment, right? So there's so many things that are at stake. And not only that, again, with that 7% of words, I think you ladies are both familiar with DISC. Maybe many of the listeners are familiar with some type of behavioral assessment similar to DISC. Depending upon our styles, we put different emphasis and meaning to words based on our behavioral preferences. So for example, I'm a high D. D stands for dominant driving. We tend to be impatient and we move really quickly. I'm married to a high S. S stands for steady relator. He is the most laid back, steady man you will ever meet in your life. When I say, you know, hey, honey, I need this right away, my version of that phrase right away means 5 minutes ago. My husband's version of the phrase right away means whenever it's convenient, right? So all, we are operating with two different data points, and yet we're both going to be frustrated with each other at the end. So, you know, I think for everybody that's listening right now, I hope some of the messages resonating are the ownership piece of it, of how we feel and choose to see things are on us and not on the world around us, and the curiosity piece, and then also human behavior. You know, those things are always really important, no matter your role or industry, because people are people wherever you go. Those are things that are really important for us to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's great. I did want to ask both of you quickly here, you know, as businesses are kind of scrambling over these last few months and culture may have kind of fallen off their priority list, as just trying to kind of manage the newness of these scary times, what would your message be to kind of try and get your company culture back on track and make it a priority again and get people feeling good about wanting to be at work?
Well, I think as a leader, I think it's always about making sure that you do understand, you know, really generally speaking, is how your team is doing. So I'm a big believer in doing some type of an assessment to understand really how are people, you know, how is working from home working for them? Like, what are they missing? You know, it goes back to that curiosity piece, right? Of really assessing and understanding. And then I think secondly, you know, it's really trying to make sure that you are communicating and making sure that employees understand kind of what's happening and being as transparent as possible and allowing, you know, really a good opportunity for two-way communication. So, you know, really since everything kicked into high gear with COVID and everybody was working remotely, you know, we started doing, you know, weekly all team calls. And, you know, the first half of the call is really just to talk about what is happening and what are the plans, how are we doing, what's next. But then we also have a section of that meeting at the end where we break into groups, into smaller groups, so we can have conversations and so that everybody on the team can ask questions. And we always ask that question, what's the word on the street? What's everybody thinking about? What's everybody concerned about? So we want to make sure it's an opportunity for two-way communication, just so everybody really has a chance, you know, to participate. And then the third thing is really giving an employee a chance to get involved, right? If we're facing a problem or need to find a solution, really getting them actively involved and helping us to create that. So I think it's really just important to, you know, make sure that we're as intentional as possible about how do we get them involved. So those are some of the things that I've been thinking about with culture and how to really, you know, so to me, I think it's all about assessing, trying to understand how are people doing, you know, making sure there's an opportunity for two-way communication and then trying to continue to keep employees engaged in what you're doing so that they feel like they're part of the solution.
That's great. What do you think, Amy?
I think, you know, as people are coming back and there's talks about shifts in the market, right? There's talks about the economy taking a turn down. What I would really caution people on is an economy is just the collective behaviors of its people. So we have to act as if, you know, we are the result of that. So show up and behave in a way that works towards the economy that you want to see. And my fear a little bit with some leaders and some companies is that they can go into scarcity mentality, which is, oh my gosh, we have to stop investing in our people. We can't keep doing these meetings. We're not going to do the fun. So they're going to stop investing and focusing on culture because their shift is going to go purely to selling. And their shift is going to go, we've got to make money. We've got to make money. And that is true. But let's remember what worked when things were going well. Give love, get love. You give love to your people, you bring them in, as Mary Beth was saying, you communicate with them, you're curious, you're bringing empathy to the table, they will go work harder for you because they feel invested in and they really trust the mission and they have the loyalty. If we forget about that and we're just chasing after the dollar, your results are going to mimic the scarcity mentality. You know, abundance breeds abundance. So I think focusing on culture is even more important than ever. Investing in your people is more important than ever because that will breed the results that you get.
Oh, I love that. I feel like I'm going to put that on a t-shirt. I love that.
I know. I love that so much because I feel like it's also, you know, it's really about kind of trying to lead with positivity and optimism and not letting fear drive the destiny. Is there a reason to be a little bit fearful now? Maybe, right? But I just feel like if you can kind of continue to focus on the optimism and the positivity about what's next and exploring about what's next and having good curiosity and good optimism, you know, that's really, I feel like that's what employees also need to hear.
Yeah, they really do. This is great. Ladies, we're out of time. And I mean, I've already got a couple things written down here that I'm going to put on t-shirts for all of us, for the whole team. So thank you, Amy, so Amen. Much for, thanks for taking the time with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, ladies.
Amy, so thanks for the tune-up. I love it.
We do the tune-up. That's totally correct. And so for our listeners, if there's anything to take away from today, it's own your 50, keep the curiosity going. And then I really love that, remember what worked when things were going well. So we'll have this on all of our social media sites. And for today, thanks for listening. This is the More Than a Chair podcast. Social media sites. And for today, thanks.